We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
An LSU quarterback look like that. And as an Alabama fan, for the first time in a while, I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
So they're going to bring the defense. And they got to do
right
now.
Is it not just going to score on defense and kick return?
It's not going to be
Patrick Peterson running stuff back. It doesn't work like that anymore.
Yeah, that was a little bit scary for me watching that. But yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. You look around and you see what Trevor Lawrence is. He's a cut above with all the things that you would ask someone to do at the next level. Like obviously, like when you're looking at what Oklahoma is doing. Quarterback's playing pretty well.
Yep.
He's doing it, but it's different when you're watching Trevor Lawrence. Like
he's 6'6".
It's a guy that seems to really have a grasp of all of the NFL stuff inside a crazy good college system.
But eyes down the field, and when he's on the move, the rush is just sort of moving past him.
You realize we're going to end up having a conversation at some point later on toward the NFL draft where the Dolphins end up with the number one overall pick. That's going to happen. Tua will be there for them. And we're going to have an honest-to-God discussion about if you're as bad as the Dolphins are, whether
you wait another year?
Sell that pick, sell Tua, essentially, and wait to get the next college quarterback. Do you understand how crazy that is? Because every time you have that conversation, you are wrong. It never works that way. But for this kid, it might actually be worth it. You know, it's like the couple who's like, well, you know, a trial separation doesn't really work. But for us, I think it could work. It's nonsense.
I love the idea of the Dolphins players like, I'm ready to go home.
Can I leave now?
I'd very much like to not
I don't like
be
being
here.
At camp
they're
anymore.
They're hiring Antonio Brown social media consultants.
Yeah, we should probably spend some time talking about that too on the show today. Because I can't figure out if we should be concerned about Antonio Brown.
Well, yes.
Or if he's a genius. If he's a genius that just played the system.
Can it be both?
It could be.
That's kind of how we discussed both. It, where the idea of player power, player agency, versus the overbearing power of management and ownership, governorship, whatever you want to call it. I don't mind a player winning.
I don't either.
I don't like him. I don't like the way he's behaving. I don't like any of it, but I don't like the Raiders either. But there's something to be said for a player affecting change that benefits him. That's not a bad thing necessarily.
I went through a whole, like, and you can go back through my timeline. I did a whole GIF screed about this, about everyone involved. And to me, I did the Meryl Streep, Jennifer Lopez standing and pointing yes, saying this is what NBA players think about what Antonio Brown did.
Right.
Because that's exactly what an NBA player would have done. And what Brown has taught other players. Now, you have to keep in mind, you have to be the best at what you do.
You can't be Jimmy
Butler.
This.
You can't be you can't even be Melvin Gordon. You have to be the best at what you do. You don't have to be afraid of NFL owners.
Not for nothing, but GIF Screed sounds like a really good LSU slot receiver, doesn't it? Like
it
the
does.
Guy who's like also
sophomore,
kick return. Yeah.
No.
GIF Screed.
No.
Where we have
GIF Screed is a 15-year-old Ontario kid who was taken in the fifth round of the draft.
Right.
He'll be in the OHL this year.
Okay.
Yeah, GIF Screed will eventually
playing
be like
wing.
He'll be like a 25 goal a year.
He's about to spend his first summer away
score.
From home kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I got it.
Guys, thank you very much for hanging out. The Bernstein McKnight Show. You can hear it every day here, 9 a.m. until noon. You're listening to WSCR in HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, Sports Radio 670, The Score, a radio.com sports station. The top of the hour is being brought to you by First American Bank, the largest privately held bank in Illinois. We do more for your money. We need to talk about, speaking of Illinois, we need to talk about the Illini at some point today. And we got all sorts of stuff that we're going to do on the show. Tony, why don't we get started? Let's go!
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on the Lawrence Holmes Show.
Number one, a cool September night with little wind. You cannot pick a better day to try a 50-yard field goal than that. Pinheiro said that he was good from mid-50s yesterday. If you have a guy that you don't feel confident or you're not confident in your mechanism to make a 51-yard field goal, that guy should not be on your roster. And I'm not taking a shot at Eddie. I'm taking a shot at the decision-making that goes into all of this. It was a perfect night to kick at Soldier Field. Perfect. Mid-60s with light wind. You can't tell me that you're good from 46. But no, 51. No. No, we're not going to do that.
Make me a bicycle, clown.
Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and I am here with you until 2 o'clock. We have a big show today. Is Heron here? Is that him? I saw him on the TV last night, out here looking clean, hanging out. Him and Sierra and Lou talking about the Bears and all sorts of stuff. But we're going to talk with Anthony Heron coming up in about 10 minutes or so. So make sure that you stick around for that because he's one of the best analysts in the game. He also has, if you're a Mitch fan, he has some thoughts about Thursday's game that you might like. So we will discuss that with him coming up in a little bit. The crew, they are working overtime today. Tony Gill is the executive producer of this fine program. Rick Camp is also here. You will hear from them. I decided we are not going to do the rundown today. There's a lot for us to discuss. And there's some things that I kind of wanted to... the rundown will be done like in here. Because I do want to talk about the fact that here's a question for you, and you don't have to call or text. I just want you to think about this, and I want you to, as you're in your car or if you're at your desk, I want you to be honest with me on this. Right? We family, as Bernie Mac would say, we family. How much of the Cubs did you watch this weekend? How much? Because I feel like the NFL came in and swallowed up the Cubs. I'm not talking about, Tony, I know what you did. You watched the condensed games. Campy, you probably did too.
Damn right I did.
I know I did. I was like, MLB.com, thank you. Condensed games, here we go.
It made me realize, like, I may enjoy consuming baseball like that for the rest of my life.
Look, as far as what we do, our profession, the condensed game on MLB.com is dynamic. It's so great.
It's like the less potent version of Red Zone.
You can watch all three of those games that the Cubs lost this weekend in 20 minutes and go, okay, great, I got it. Meanwhile, I did take a look yesterday. I think the condensed games on NFL.com, I think, are 45 minutes. They're like, no, you're going to get all these replays and everything else that we want to throw in here, even though the ball is actually only in motion for 11 minutes out of the game. But tell the truth, you were so gooped up on Gop, as Uncle Terry would say, after Thursday. Like, you were lathered up like the Leonardo DiCaprio GIF, just screaming, like frothing at the mouth, that you didn't have time for the Cubs. The only way that you consume Cubs is like, man, I can't believe these dudes have lost three in a row.
Ooh, look who's playing Sunday night.
You know what? What's messed up? Here's what's messed up for baseball. And you know I love baseball more than anything else. Red Sox, Yankees, Sunday night baseball. Starts same time. Sunday night game between the Patriots and the Steelers. Patriots-Steelers game is over. I mean, like, legitimately over, not just over because the Patriots stomped a mud hole in them. It's over. I flip over. I was like, I just want to see where the baseball game is. Eighth inning. Really? Really? A whole Sunday night football? people out here singing. They're doing all sorts of stuff. That game's over with. It's done. And I look over and there you are with your Yankees Red Sox game. That's enough. Call it. So wait, everyone on the Cubs is hurt now too, right?
Apparently, yeah.
Javi has a hairline fracture. He might not play again until and if the Cubs make it to the playoffs. There's not a lot of organizational depth at shortstop, so Addison Russell goes over to shortstop and throws the ball away three times in a row, and then he gets hit in the head, and now he's in the concussion protocol. So there's no one to play shortstop for the Cubs. So they have to call up Nico Hoerner from AA to come and play shortstop. Oh, and John Lester's been bad. And now you're going, yeah, he has been bad. Do you want to know how bad he's been?
How bad is he?
Oh, nice. Here's how bad John Lester has been. In his last seven starts, he's thrown 36 and two-thirds innings. He's struck out 38 and walked 22. He has a 6.63 ERA and a whip of 1.85. Ladies and gentlemen, that's bad. That is real bad. But here's the thing about the Cubs. They're still, if the season ended today, still in the playoffs, kind of. They go on the road to play in the wild card game. But that margin is getting smaller and smaller. Because now, all of a sudden, the Reds did the Cubs a solid yesterday by beating Arizona, who's now only a game and a half back in the wild card. Remember what I said a few weeks ago? That the Cubs are a marathon runner. And they were doing fine. Everything was fine until they got to about mile 23. And then, oh, geez, my hamstring, my knee hurts. I'm dehydrated. I need to move over to the side of the road so I can do some business over there. I'm going to finish this race, but I'm not going to beat my personal record. If that analogy doesn't work, how about this? They're a car going downhill and all the wheels seem to be falling off before they reach their destination. They're Vin Diesel in Fast and Furious with a car on fire. So wait, it's not just Baez and Russell. Chris Bryant's knee doesn't work anymore, right? So you got that to deal with along with everything else. 20 games left. And it feels like there's so much time left, but not enough games left for the Cubs.
What do you think the percentages of people that would be like, you know what, let's just miss this all together rather than have to go up against Scherzer?
Hey, I heard it yesterday on Hit and Run, Campy. I heard people calling Matt Spiegel and saying, I'm out. I'm done. You're done. Your team's still in the playoffs right at this moment. At this moment.
I got a waiver wire to worry about on Tuesday. I don't want to have to deal with this play-in game.
That's what it is. I mean, let's be real, real. I don't have enough mental space to keep the Bears losing on Thursday night, my fantasy team afloat, and dealing with the Cubs. I don't have enough room, so somebody got to go.
Shouts to OJ.
Well, which one? OJ the Juice Man?
Oh, yeah, the man with the fantasy team where it's had some rough goes lately.
Didn't he have Antonio Brown on it?
Yeah, and Andrew Luck.
It's not a terrible follow on Twitter.
Now. Yeah.
It's not a terrible follow.
OJ still has money. Like, he's always like in some golf club-y area.
Tony, like that's
and he's not paying it to people that need it.
That's part of the bit. He's not paying it to the people who he legally has to pay the money. He's been embezzling money from the Goldman family for 20 years. This was all settled. Wrongful death suit, all that good stuff. He's just been like, I got this NFL pension, and you have to pay me in cash. So there's no paper trail. And then if I sell this memorabilia to you, I might come back and get it. And then I'm going to go to jail for that. Man, this really took a left turn. Weren't we just talking about the Cubs?
You're welcome.
I feel like we were just talking about the Cubs. And then all of a sudden, I'm relitigating the O.J. Simpson case. I don't know.
Which is going to have a better ending?
Wow. Rick Camp said that, folks, on his last show here on The Score. He said that.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
On his last show. Okay, we need someone to help us get back on the road. Wow. Woo-hoo-hoo. I don't even know if I should read the segment sponsor because they're like, please don't connect me with that.
They knew what they bought in.
No. Here's what I'll do for them, okay? I'll give them a little bit of separation. Back to the Cubs. Do you know that at one point this season, the St. Louis Cardinals were 41-41? Since then, they're 40-21. They have run right by, and now they have a 4.5-game lead. Here's the good news. The Cubs have 4 games in San Diego, and we will have all 4 of them here for you on The Score. Then they come home. If they survive San Diego, they come home, 4 against Pittsburgh, 3 against Cincinnati, and then 4 against the Cardinals. I was thinking that last series at the against the Cardinals was going to mean something. I don't know if that's going to be the case anymore. But this one should mean something, and it could mean the end. We'll see. Okay, this segment is being brought to you by Fast Park and Relax Indoor Airport Parking serving Midway Airport. Getting to the airport is stressful. Parking shouldn't be. Fast Park and Relax, a new indoor parking facility 2 minutes from Chicago's Midway Airport, is only $11. I've seen that place. I'm like, okay, now I can go park there. You can check them out at gothefastpark.com for reservations, and their van will take you from your spot to the terminal. Thefastpark.com. When we come back, Anthony Heron is going to join me. He's going to be here in studio. We're going to talk about the Bears game and the NFL. You will not want to miss it. It's next here on
Selling a Little or a Lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
There was times where it did, yeah. Yeah, there's times, and he's seeing things again. They disguise well. They do different things, and that's what defenses do. So, but we just gotta get in a better rhythm, whether that's personnel wise, whether that's stacking completions, getting the run game going different ways. But we gotta go back to the drawing board.
Bears head coach Matt Nagy talking about where the Bears are as they start week 2 in their preparation for Monday Night Football. Well, not Monday Night, Sunday afternoon football. Monday Night Football tonight we'll be watching because Vic Fangio will get his first opportunity to be a head coach in the NFL in a regular season game. And I'm sure that he was rubbing his hands like Birdman watching the Bears offense on Thursday. Anthony Heron is here. If he were on the phone, I would tell you that he was joining me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. 500 new and used vehicles for you at Alpamonte Ford. But he's here in studio, which means that he gets a $51 gift card to Hub 51.
Felt so honored when Tony brought that over, man. That was a nice, pleasant surprise. I didn't think that was coming.
Well, that's what we like to do. Since we do a lot of in-studio interviews, mm-hmm. I said to Mitch, I was like, can we do something for the people that come and hang out? And he was like, okay. So I love Hub 51. It's one of my mm-hmm. favorite. Yeah. My favorite food item in Chicago is the chicken nacho at Hub 51.
All right.
So, and their French toast is.
I don't know if I've had the chicken nacho.
It's for a guy like you, it's like perfect size, but I usually get the half order of it. It's so good. But their French toast is amazing as well. So Hub 51 right there on the corner of Dearborn and Hubbard. Get it? It's not Hub Arkish's place. It's Hub 51 because they're on Hubbard. Okay. So Anthony's here with me. I have a lot of questions for you.
Good.
But my first one is a simple one. What did you make of Thursday night's game?
So I felt like, and I said, and some folks on Twitter, like, oh, everybody's coming out afterwards saying that people had a beat on the Bears. I said it on Dan and Connor's show earlier in the day, Thursday, that guys I know with the Packers organization and other teams around the league have said that they've spent essentially an offseason breaking down the Bears, and specifically in Green Bay, because that's what relates to Thursday night, we saw what some of the folks in Green Bay were telling me be executed, that they felt like they had a bead on personnel groupings, on the scheme that Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich put together, and felt like there were gives, there were tells that they could be able to exploit defensively. And it felt like that was part of what played out on Thursday. The game as a whole, it was good to see. I was unsurprised by how the defense played, but it was great to see. Now, with Chuck Pagano leading the Bears defense, there's tangible evidence that the players in that locker room have that, all right, Chuck can call us into the right situation. We've got the requisite talent to make every play in the book, and we can do that. You know, there was some tempo that Aaron Rodgers threw at them early in the second quarter that threw things off for a bit. Overall, even throughout the course of the rest of the game, he was certainly more effective than Mitch, but the defense was still able to hold their own, where the organization, the roster of the Green Bay Packers on both sides of the ball has been really revamped over the last couple of seasons. And credit to Green Bay, they are a much better, much more talented team now than they were two seasons ago. Personnel-wise, especially offensively, they don't have the personnel that the Bears have, but they certainly have the quarterback. They've got one of the greats in Aaron Rodgers that can find a way to split that difference a little bit, where the Bears overall have a better roster. Offensively, it might have been the least effective game that Matt Nagy's had as a play caller since he's been the Bears head coach. And there were multiple reasons for that, multiple concerns I had with that as it relates to the lack of a run game, especially in the second half. It felt like early on when they came out and it stuck out to me more in even rewatching the game. In the third quarter, there were some nice moments that Mike Davis had. Not big splash plays that he had breaking off 20, 30-yard runs, but just things that get you ahead of the chains early in a series, where they came out of the locker room looking like, okay, we do want to reestablish the run here, or establish it really for the first time. Didn't stick with that at all. And I was struck by some of Matt Nagy's comments afterwards, just when people were even directly after the game asking him about the lack of even rush attempts, let alone success in the run game. He talked about game flow and some other things that I didn't think necessarily seemed that accurate for why you would get away from the run game to that extent. Not only with it being a four-point game, but a four-point game where, aside from that early phase of the second quarter where Aaron Rodgers threw some tempo at you and floated a pass into the end zone, where he exploits the fact that Deion Bush, their least effective covered safety, is there being boxed out by Jimmy Graham, one of the great jump ball tight ends in NFL history. That's their one touchdown. Then aside from that, the defense, while some first downs were gained, it wasn't a game that I felt like Matt Nagy should have felt like this one's going to get away with us, because it looks like Aaron Rodgers is really about to get hot. The D did their job, so I think it should have been coached and called offensively more to that tenor, to that temperament, like Matt LaFleur did with Green Bay. He was pretty effective, even though their run game wasn't dominant. He did enough where it keeps you off balance, sets up play action, where Aaron Rodgers can turn his back to that defense and say, all right, let me show off my arm talent.
Okay, so when it comes to calling run plays, and I haven't heard Nagy speak to this specifically, my assumption is that on his call sheet, there are straight run plays, that not everything is an RPO. Mm-hmm. So I understand the idea of when they had RPO calls, that Mitch did his box count and was like, oh, this is a pass. This is a pass, which is what Green Bay wanted him to do. Mm-hmm. My question is, there has to be run calls on his play sheet, right? That he can just say, I write 30 dive.
Right, right.
And there's no option on this play, right?
Without a doubt.
I'm not crazy in thinking that.
Not in the least.
So why is it that when my biggest two issues, the 4th and 10 thing and that, if you wanted to run the ball, you're the guy calling the plays.
Mm-hmm.
Then why didn't it happen in a game that was never more than one possession?
Yeah, yeah. There's no adequate reason that to me would explain why there weren't more rush attempts. I mean, on paper, there was 15 run attempts. It was actually 12 run calls where he actually legitimately called them into a run play. And like you said, a lot of the Bears' run game is based off the run pass option scenario where the quarterback doesn't necessarily even need to hand it off to the running back. One of those 3rd and shorts was an RPO where Mitch decided, and he pulled it really quickly, so it didn't force the defense to kind of buy that mesh point, that give, where he didn't keep it in the belly of the back for a little bit. So then he steps out, and he's trying to flip it to Adam Shaheen real quick, but you could tell he already had that predetermined in his head, so he just did it way too fast. Defense doesn't react to it, and now you've got a 3rd and short where, you know, in a similar fashion to the way I viewed the earlier 3rd and short where they handed it to Cordarrelle Patterson on a dive play. To me, it doesn't make as much sense as, and I was saying this on post-game live, on our post-game show, and I'm sure, because I've heard Alex, you know, touch on a couple of different things related to the preseason reps and just the run game itself. I'm sure you guys touched on that with having Olin on your show too, that to me, when you have an offensive line that has shown, even in the time before Matt Nagy got here, that they are talented with the ability to block a more traditional physical brand of run game, then to me, I think you play to those strengths in some of those moments, those critical downs and distance, 3rd and short, goal-to-goal types of scenarios where you just allow them to be better than the opponent. And to me, I was hoping that the offseason spent in some more self-scout type of situations where Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich would take that time and say, you know what, we were maybe doing a little too much in those times. We were maybe trying to outsmart the opponent too frequently in situations where just the more simplistic brand of football would work. Like when you got into the month of December last year, and Jordan Howard began to get used in a different manner where he was being called into more situations, running vertically. He averaged over 80 yards a game, over 4.5 yards a carry in the month of December, not only because, you know, the offensive line's blocking better. I felt like they called the run game in a way that suited his style more and suited the style of blocking that the offensive line has shown to be really effective over the years. I'm hoping that we'll see in some of those critical downs and distances, short yardage, goal-to-go, where they'll just lean on their personnel. They say, we've got powerful backs. We've got an offensive line who can block the run, regardless of what my fellow Hawkeyes, I'm wearing my Hawkeye gear in the Cy-Hawk week here. I got my Iowa shirt on. But James Daniels on the 1/3 and short, yeah, quick swim move by Kenny Clark. Got beat like he stole something. Play is likely to get made in the backfield, regardless of who the ball carrier is.
In that space to make that move.
Yeah, for a man of that size to get skinny in a gap like he did, that was special. And he was the reason that they felt comfortable getting rid of Mike Daniels. Mike Daniels is still a really effective interior defensive lineman. Kenny Clark is less expensive, and, you know, he can do the same things that Mike Daniels was doing. It was evidence in that moment right there. So I feel like, and I'm hoping that Matt Nagy will see that he does not always need to outsmart the opponent, because it seems that the opponent is getting a bead on those moments where he wants to outsmart them. Even like there's a shovel pass they were going to try early in the game, and Mitch kind of, you know, pulled the trigger on it because, all right, you're bringing whoever it was, Broniker or Shaheen or one of the tight ends who is healthy for the game, bringing him in motion, and you're trying to run the shovel to him. Defense was right there waiting on it. So Mitch tucks it away and pulls it and tries to make something else happen with the play. Some of the things we've seen them that sort of they got away with last year, where they outsmarted defenses with last season, Green Bay appeared very ready for them. Folks, I know what the Packers told me before the game. They're going to be really ready for a lot of those things. But self-scout, Nagy, Helfrich, they're both really smart guys. I don't think this is going to be a theme throughout the season where it feels like the opponent knows exactly what the Bears are going
to
do.
So there is something to the idea of, because of what Nagy was doing last year, he was ahead of the curve. And now that there's 17 games, or now 18 games of it on tape,
yep,
that the defenses have had a chance to digest it and then go, oh, okay, well, now we know how to deploy our personnel better to deal with it.
Mm-hmm, without a doubt. And it's an advantage that Matt LaFleur had going into the game the other night as well. It's one thing to take film from when he was with other organizations, or knowing what coaching tree he came from, and, all right, here's how Sean McVay runs the offense with the Rams, so let's assume that that's what Matt LaFleur was going to do. And there were certainly a lot of similarities to that, but there was a schematic advantage that you have coming into that game, because it's the first time this opponent is seeing you as a head coach calling those plays and scheming your version of whatever that game plan is. So yes, there was definitely an advantage that the Bears had early in the season last year. With that, And Matt LaFleur will likely have that advantage here, and he won't have to face the Bears defense every week in trying to deploy that. And I believe that the division itself will end up being very deep and very competitive because you do have several new head coaches in here who, you know, I think just via their youth, if nothing else, are trying to find different ways to skin that same cat. So it's a division that while the Bears schedule is a first place schedule, it's going to be more difficult this year. I think the division overall, top to bottom, will end up shaping up to be far more difficult for the Bears this year than it was last year, too.
Can you stick around for one more segment?
I'd love it. I mean, you gave me a Hub 51 car. Yeah, let's do it.
All right, good. We're going to have more with Anthony Heron because we haven't even talked about Mitch
yet. I ain't even mentioned his name yet.
We haven't even talked about the quarterback. We haven't talked about 10 and Anthony's thoughts about Mitchell Trubisky's game. They might shock you. They might shock you.
Yeah, but does he suck? Like, well, I just want to know, man. Like, I'm tired of, like, all this waiting. I just want
to
know.
A lot of folks seem to think so.
Yeah, I just want to know. Just flat answer, does he suck?
Well, we're not going to ask Anthony that in the next segment. But we are going to ask him his thoughts about how Mitch played in the first game of the season after a quick timeout. Lawrence Holmes, Anthony Heron, you're listening to The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
I'm Lawrence Holmes, and I'm hanging out with Anthony Heron. He has been nice enough to stick around for an extra segment to talk a little bit about the Bears and the NFL. You can watch Anthony on Fox 32. They do a fine post-game product over there. And it was good to see you on The Final Word last night.
Yeah, I'll be doing that throughout the season every Sunday night. Be there. We have our posted a little short snippet of it on Twitter earlier, just a little segment we're going to do called The Inside Rush. It's where I try to go a little level deeper with some breakdown, some analysis of the game, and it seemed fitting to focus on Mitch for what we did on the show last night. But yeah, every Sunday, usually the show is at 10 p.m. because the OT and everything on Fox National pushed everything a little later. We came out at 10:30 last night. So yeah, it was fun. There was plenty of Bears and football and sports in general to talk in this city, as you know.
How many jobs you got, man?
Well, too many right now, man. And my college football slate, I had Oregon the other day. It was fun to see them come out in attack mode. I mean, we were talking about Justin Herbert a little bit beforehand, so I do my Pac-12 stuff, do my Big Ten radio, do all the radio and TV I can handle around here. But it's that time of year, man.
It is. It is that time of year.
You got a few gigs your damn self.
I do. I'm adding some more. I'll be hosting the Dave Wonstead show starting tonight.
Really? All right. Okay.
So I got my suit in the car. Nice. Just head right on over and get ready for that. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. So in your tape breakdown of Mitchell Trubisky, what did you see?
I think the thing for me was after Thursday, we got off the air over on 32 on Bears postgame line. We got off the air after midnight, and then I literally had to head to O'Hare at like 4 a.m. because I had a flight that was prior to 6 a.m. to get out west for my Oregon broadcast. So I hadn't been in the city. I didn't get home till late morning yesterday. So I hadn't been in the city to absorb the Bears reaction, the Mitch reaction. So a lot of it was just me tracking social media, having a sense for what's going on. You know, folks texted me and everything else, and a little bit of, you know, DMs on social media with folks freaking out about this and that. But I felt like it's likely fairly accurate. Twitter's not always the most accurate gauge of things, but I assumed, yeah, this is probably where folks are in just full-on flame mode about what's happening with Mitch, with the offense, with Nagy, with the Bears. What I saw, and I talked about it a bit on our show on Post Game Live, but then even in watching the film again, I was even more struck that while the quarterback position and Mitch himself are the easiest target for the team in general, but especially and specifically with the Bears offense, aside from Allen Robinson, there wasn't another individual on the Bears offense that I thought played as well as Mitch did. And that's part of what I went into on The Final Word last night. I mean, there were drives early in the first half, just first half in general, because my assessment initially was, well, he played under control in the first half, and then things just kind of skewed and scattered on him a bit in the second half as the game just felt like it was getting away from him. He played better in the second half when they allowed him to open it up a little bit, when he got a little more aggressive with some of his throws. He was 10 out of 16 in the first half. The second half, there were multiple drives, specifically one of the drives I broke down from the fourth quarter of the game last night, the very opening drive of the fourth quarter, the one that ends up in third and 40 that folks, you know, rightfully made a big deal out of afterwards. Like, how do you end up in third and 40? And Matt Nagy's like, I don't have a play for third and 40. How they ended up there had very little to do with Mitch, had really nothing to do with Mitch. Yep. It was Mitch lacing passes over the middle to Allen Robinson outside the pocket. One of the two times they actually called a varied launch point where they got him out of the pocket a little bit, where he just had a dart that he threw to the sideline on a deep comeback route to Taylor Gabriel. Had another one. He fit it right over the ear of a defender, and Gabriel hits him in both hands. A difficult catch, but certainly a catchable ball that Gabriel hits him in both hands that he drops. That was one of multiple penalties back-to-back by Charles Leno that would have gotten called back anyway. So then you just end up retracting yards over and over again on a drive where Mitch is out there dealing, hitting Cohen, hitting Robinson, hitting Gabriel, the deep ball where he evades a sack and just heaves it all the way downfield. Now that's on what, I think it was second or third and 30 at that point. So yeah, it's a little bit of a hero throw on third and 30, but you evade a sack, you extend a play, you heave it downfield to Gabriel. Gabriel gets the push-off penalty before he makes the catch. That was just one example of a drive. There was a drive late in the third quarter where folks made a big deal out of Mitch allowing the delay of game calls to happen. There was a drive where the Bears are moving the ball down the field. He's hitting Shaheen. He's hitting Cohen. He's hitting Robinson, as he did throughout the night with Robinson. The two delay of game penalties, the first one, they got 10 men on the field. Mitch doesn't assign the personnel groupings. Mitch isn't sending guys on the field, so he gets out there. They break the huddle. He's looking, trying to figure out, why doesn't this formation look right? All right, clock ticks away. Mitch didn't call a timeout. Matt Nagy didn't call a timeout either. He's got all the access in the world to call the timeouts. He's the one deploying the person. Him, his coordinators, the position coaches out there, they're deploying the personnel. They could have called a timeout. Second one that happens later on in the drive. At this point, you can see there are several plays after that where Mitch is cycling his finger as he's huddling the guys up towards the sideline, signaling, get the play in quicker to me. Can you get me the play call so we can get this thing moving? He did that multiple times later in that drive. Another delay of game happens later in that drive. So I think the city itself, and I've turned into like, I tweeted this a little earlier, I've turned into the defender of all things Mitch when I immediately, you know, I did it on your show, questioned the pick of him, the selection of him in the draft. But now the city needs to get away from he's not Pat Mahomes, he's not Deshaun Watson, because that's got nothing to do with whether or not the Bears can win with Mitch. If Mitch is progressing, who immediately, developmental quarterback when they bring him in, first year, just a dry erase board of nothingness as far as his knowledge of football at this level. Second year, last season with Nagy in as his coach, we saw progression. We saw improvement. Now this year, we need to see more progression and improvement. I think there were a number of signs in the game the other night that Mitch has continued to progress and improve. Matt Nagy might have had his worst game calling plays as a coach of the Bears. The offensive line was just in shambles with what Green Bay continued to throw at them, that little sugar, fainting the blitz look and the double A gap over and over again. They didn't know whether or not they should try to slide it that direction or if the guys were actually going to come or not. They featured that throughout the game. It completely threw off the pass protection. And then they did everything they could to get Charles Leno and Bobby Massey out on an island over and over again. These are two tackles who folks are ready to run out of town. But then as you and I were discussing when they made the Matt Nagy hire, his system is such where you can – in a way, sort of disguise when you have tackles who aren't as effective as you'd like in pass protection because of the RPO, because of the quickness of the passing game, and because, frankly, he had shown the ability or the willingness in the past to hand it off to a running back more frequently than he did here in Chicago in his first season and then he did the other night. When you have a run game, when you have variance to the launch point, you don't need an offensive line that's going to be the best in the world at protecting a quarterback on 5 and 7 7-step drops. Matt Nagy didn't pull that off, and the offensive line didn't pull that off for Mitch the other night.
May I retort?
Please do.
Okay. I agree with you that a big portion of what happened with the Bears offensively falls on Nagy more than it does Mitch. And mm-hmm. the examples that you point out are really good ones. And by the way, it's not a second time that the Bears in a big situation have had 10 players on the field. You go back to the Philadelphia game where Adrian Amos is out there going, something's wrong. And he doesn't call a timeout, and neither does the head coach call a timeout. It ends up being a touchdown to the tight end on that play. Amos goes to cover the tight end on the play because he's like, someone has to cover him, and there's 10 guys out here. So that's a problem for me. My issue with Mitch, and we saw this a couple of times in the game on Thursday, they knew when he gets in trouble, he is going to lock in on Robinson because he feels like Allen Robinson can make a play for him, which I understand. I mean, you spend a lot of money. This is the guy that should be doing that for you. It wasn't just the interception in the end zone that bothered me. In the first half, the play where Savage is like, oh, I know exactly what this is. Right. I'm going to run the route for Robinson, and you have completely locked on to him. I think that's a place where his development is still – it's troubling to me that he doesn't move the safety with his eyes. Mm-hmm. And he didn't do it to Amos on the play in the end zone, where Amos knew the formation and said, ah, I know what you're going to try and do. Mm-hmm. All Mitch has to do is look him. And and you get
you get that
half
hold
a step.
Hold him in the middle of the field for a bit. Yep.
And maybe you end up making that play. So even on there, you're right. Like the play where he is outside the pocket and he makes a throw, and he's one of the best, you know, throwing quarterbacks on the run last year. But when he's in the pocket, I'm still concerned that there isn't enough field awareness for him to get the most out of what he's got physically.
If they're going to throw him 45 to 50 times a game, that'll continue to be an issue until he really develops it. If, like, Kirk Cousins goes 8 out of 10 attempts in the game yesterday because Minnesota's running the ball and they have a great defense and they can get away with doing that, then a lot of high-level quarterbacks and quarterbacks with talent and ability to throw the football can thrive in that environment. Mitch can definitely, to me, thrive in that environment. Calling 45 to 50 fast plays in a game, that just sets him up for where he's in his development. That sets him up for failure, to not move the launch point more frequently than they did the other night, especially against a pass rush that has a bead on your pass protection, sets him up to struggle in a game like it was the other night. So, you know, that's where I'm laughing at myself as the defender of all things Mitch, because I don't think Mitch is a great quarterback. I don't think Mitch is a finished product yet. I certainly hope he's not, because if he's not, then he's not maximizing his talents that he has available to him. My issue is not that I think Mitch is awesome yet. My issue is that Mitch was placed in a position Thursday night.
Horrible one.
Where it would be very difficult for most quarterbacks to thrive in the position he was in the other night. It doesn't mean the Bears can't win with Mitch, because there's going to be a few snaps in a game where he throws a ball into tight coverage and maybe one gets tipped, maybe one gets intercepted. It's going to happen sometimes. There was multiple passes Aaron Rodgers should have gotten picked off the other night, and he's Aaron stinking Rodgers. So when you're asked to throw the ball a lot in a game, every once in a while defense is going to get a beat on you, or every once in a while your eye discipline isn't going to be as adequate as it should be. And for a guy who literally did not attempt to pass in the preseason, to not, frankly, be on top of his eye discipline isn't something that shocks me. I think he should have played a little bit more in the preseason. That's a discussion we had during the preseason. I feel like the results of the offense in the game the other night were part of that, regardless of what I think at this point, it's the proper approach to say that's not a problem, because within the locker room, the Bears don't want that to feel like an excuse for what was out there the other night. But for me, with my eyes and what I anticipated going into it, yes, I thought it was going to be a problem. I do feel like it was a problem with the offense early in the season last year. Hopefully, they kind of cycle out of that and get that out of their system. But yes, Mitch does not read defenses consistently at a high level. He's better at reading them now than he was a year ago. He's certainly better at it last year than he was the season before that. That's what the expectation should be when you take a developmental quarterback. That was the issue I had with the pick. It wasn't that Mitch didn't have talent. It's that Mitch is a developmental quarterback. You're taking at number two in the draft.
And moving
up to get him. But at this point, there's a formula that's very available to the Bears. I mean, they went 12-4 with him last year. They can win games with Mitch again this year. I think it's the I feel like there's a lot of folks following the Bears in the city, in the media, the fans, everyone else, who it feels like they're still hanging on to the fact that he's not Deshaun Watson and that he's not Pat Mahomes. He's not. And especially from a Mahomes standpoint, he probably never will be.
Mm-mm.
That's okay. Like, Jared Goff isn't those guys either. He brought the Rams to a Super Bowl appearance last year. And so much of the Jared Goff discussion is about Sean McVay being a genius. Jared Goff is a talented dude. Like, he was a number one overall pick before Sean McVay was a head coach. Now you take a coach who can refine his skills, put him in a position where Todd Gurley, the running back, is the focal point of the offense. And then on occasion, when we have to ask him to really step up and do something with special arm talent, Jared Goff is in a position to do it. That, to me, is the formula the Bears can definitely have consistent success with Mitch Trubisky. It doesn't have to be sit in the pocket and carve somebody up 43 to 50 pass attempts a game. And I'll be surprised if that's a formula we see very frequently this year.
Yeah, and I don't think it would make sense to do it this week coming up against Vic. And with those edge dudes that he's got, that could be a real problem for the Bears. Mr. Heron, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for coming to hang out. Enjoy that Hub 51 gift card.
I appreciate it, man. I will. Definitely will.
Yeah. Take Bishop to brunch. He likes brunch, right?
I got to get Bishop in the right mood. You know, we love taking him out. If we're going to unleash him on the public, though, we got to make sure he's had ample rest. We got to make sure he's had a snack beforehand. We need a place with, like, a big runway where he can run around and not beat up other people up when he's kind of storming through a restaurant.
All right.
Yeah, well, there's factors in that.
I mean, that makes sense for the child of two athletes. That he's kind of running through, just kind of lowering his shoulder on people, which is good. Anthony Heron is the best. You should be following him on Twitter at Big Ant Heron. I know what you're thinking. Lawrence, you have spent a lot of time talking about the Bears today. Are you going to talk about the Cubs? Yeah, we are. You know why? Because Tony Andracki is here in studio, and he saw everything that happened in Milwaukee. We're going to talk with him about it next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.